Deuteronomy, the 24th and the 25th chapters. Remember, the story here, or I should say the events here, are heading toward, and Moses is telling them how to run their lives, their government, and how to run their cities and everything else that's, that they must do when they go into the Promised Land. And it's very important for us to go back. And remember, these are not just Moses' ideas. They're not Moses' thinking. It's the one who said, I speak to Moses face to face. I hide nothing from him. I'm telling him everything that I want. I'm telling him everything, how I think, how I act. And so we get to know, quote, Elohim by and through basically what Moses is telling us. And the God of Abraham, Isaac, Jacob is very, very clear through Moses. And we as individuals, we all know that God and God only is the one that can open up ears and open up eyes and open up hearts and open up minds. So as we proceed here with the 24th, the 25th chapter, there's some very unusual things that we are going to encounter. And you're immediately, your mind is going to say, I don't know about that one. Because we live in a society, and in modern times, quote, in a quote, it would be very strange and odd for us to do the things or even think about doing the things which are being written here. So, with that being said, I guess we have a reader. For our 24th and 25th chapter of Deuteronomy.
Deuteronomy 24. When a man takes a wife and marries her, if then she finds no favor in his eyes because he has found some indecency in her, he writes her a certificate of divorce and puts it in her hand and sends her out of his house. And she departs out of his house. And if he goes and becomes another man's wife, and the latter man hates her and writes her a certificate of divorce and puts it in her hand and sends her out of his house, or if the latter man dies, who took her to be his wife, then her former husband, who sent her away, may not take her again to be his wife after she has been defiled, for that is an abomination before the Lord. And you shall not bring sin upon your land that the Lord your God has given you for an inheritance. When a man is newly married, he shall not go out with the army or be liable for any other public duty. He shall be free at home 1 year to be happy with his wife whom he has taken. No one shall take a mill or an upper millstone in pledge, for that would be taking a life in pledge. If a man is found stealing one of his brothers and of the people of Israel, and if he treats him as a slave or sells him, then that thief shall die. So you shall purge the evil from your midst. Take care, in a case of leprous disease, to be very careful to do everything according to all that the Levitical priests shall direct you. As I commanded them, so you shall be careful to do. Remember that the Lord your God did to Miriam on the way as you came out of Egypt. When you make your neighbor a loan of any sort, you shall not go into his house to collect his pledge. You shall stand outside, and the man to whom you make the loan shall bring the pledge out to you. And if he is a poor man, you shall not sleep in his pledge. You shall restore it to him, the pledge, as the sun sets, that he may sleep in his cloak and bless you. And it shall be righteousness for you before the Lord your God. You shall not oppress the hired servant who is poor and needy, whether he is one of your brothers or one of the sojourners who are in your land within your towns. You shall give him his wages on the same day, before the sun sets, for he is poor and counts on it, lest he cry out against you to the Lord, and you be guilty of sin. Fathers shall not be put to death because of their children, nor children be put to death because of their fathers. Each one shall be put to death for his own sin. You shall not pervert the justice due to the sojourner or to the fatherless, or take a widow's garment in pledge. But you shall remember that you were a slave in Egypt, and the Lord your God redeemed you from there. Therefore, I command you to do this. When you reap your harvest in your field, and forget a sheaf in the field, you shall not go back to get it. It shall be for the sojourner, the fatherless, and the widow, that the Lord your God may bless you in all the work of your hands. When you beat your olive trees, you shall not go over them again. It shall be for the sojourner, the fatherless, and the widow. When you gather the grapes of your vineyard, you shall not strip it afterward. It shall be for the sojourner, the fatherless, and the widow. You shall remember that you were a slave in the land of Egypt. Therefore, I command you to do this. If there is a dispute between men, and they come into court, and the judges decide between them, acquitting the innocent and condemning the guilty, then if the guilty man deserves to be beaten, then the judge shall cause him to lie down and be beaten in his presence with a number of stripes in proportion to his offense. 40 stripes may be given to him, but not more, lest, if one shall go on to beat him with more stripes than these, your brother shall be degraded in your sight. You shall not muzzle an ox when it is treading out the grain. If brothers dwell together, and one of them dies and has no son, the wife of the dead man shall not be married outside the family to a stranger. Her husband's brother shall go into her and take her as his wife and perform the duty of a husband's brother to her. And the first son whom she bears shall succeed in the name of his dead brother, that his name may not be blotted out of Israel. And if the man does not wish to take his brother's wife, then his brother's wife shall go up to the gate to the elders and say, "My husband's brother refuses to perpetuate his brother's name in Israel. He will not perform the duty of a husband's brother to me." When the elders of his city shall come and speak to him, and if he persists, saying, "I do not wish to take her," then his brother's wife shall go up to him in the presence of the elders and pull his sandal off his foot and spit in his face. And she shall answer and say, "So shall it be done to the man who does not build up his brother's house." And the name of his house shall be called in Israel, the place, the house of him who had his sandal pulled off. When men fight with one another, and the wife of the one draws near to rescue her husband from the hand of him who is beating him, and puts out her hand and seizes him by the private parts, then you shall cut off her hand. Your eye shall have no pity. You shall not have in your bag two kinds of weights, a large and a small. You shall not have in your house two kinds of measures, a large and a small. A full and fair weight you shall have, a full and fair measure you shall have, that your days may be long in the Lord, in the land that your Lord your God has given you. For all who do such things, all who act dishonestly, are an abomination to the Lord your God. Remember what Amalek did to you on the way that he came out of Egypt, how he attacked you on the way when you were faint and weary, and cut off your tail, those who were lagging behind you, and he did not fear God. Therefore, when the Lord your God has given you rest from all your enemies around you in the land that the Lord your God has given you for an inheritance to possess, you shall blot out the memory of Amalek from under heaven. You shall not forget.
Pretty interesting stuff, huh? Where do you want us to begin? Okay, let's just begin with chapter 24. I guess might as well, right? What's the story in the first section here? Verse 1 to 5. Is it divorce and remarriage? What is it about? No one knows. All right, somewhere along the line, this story starts leading out to where a bill of divorce was to be presented to the woman. All right? Why? Jeff?
So she could get remarried.
So she could get remarried. He says it could not. She can get remarried. That's true. What is the issue here on this one, though? If the second one divorces him, what does the first one do? Yes.
It says here, because he finds some uncleanness in there. What uncleanness are they talking about?
What uncleanness?
Adultery. Pleasing to him.
Or it could be adultery or any other act that is something that the script doesn't tell you what that is. But now remember that we have read this before from Exodus and Numbers. It's just not an automatic thing you get to do. You have to go through some, quote, court of law. It's not like saying, okay, here it is, goodbye. They have to prove that she is. We have not gone to that, did we? Yeah, we did. You have to prove that she is dishonorable. Right? How? You remember? Yeah, remember at the temple? I mean, at the tabernacle? The little dirt. And she had to partake of it. And if it was turned, made her sick, then she's unclean. If she's not, guess what he's stuck with? Yeah, he's stuck with a wife. So he has to prove that. It's not necessarily, well, you know, woman I don't like anymore. You're no longer my, you know, I don't like the way you do sex. I like to do sex differently. That's not what he's talking about. Talk about doing something totally different. Wanting to dump her. Now, you just can't get away with that. Torah speaking. But what did, why did Moses give it? Well, Yeshua said why Moses gave it. Hardness of the heart. Now, what does hardness of the heart mean?
Insensitive.
Insensitive, okay. Is not pleased to be with you anymore? Okay. What else? Ellie?
Well, for one thing, to save her life, because in some countries that divorce is not allowed, the women get killed.
Okay. What is God's thinking? We say, no, that's Moses' word. No, what is God thinking? Why provide for her?
It seems to be something about marriage that it reflects a plan he has with us. So it's to leave no one unprovided for.
What does the old word husband mean? What?
Caretaker.
One that takes care of something. Now, in the very beginning, what took place? Genesis, okay. What took place?
They become one flesh.
Okay. Remember, she was not created from the ground.
That was the first surgery.
She was created out of Adam. Very, very important. But then the Eternal and gave Adam the woman, right? And what did he want? I'm sorry, what?
She is his job.
His job! A man has it now. He has a job to do. Even though, yeah, he take care of the garden, you know. There were no weeds in those days. I don't know what he did. Probably prune things. I don't know what he did. I don't know because I wasn't there. And we know that he was outside of the garden. He named all the animals. All right? And then God says, okay, now I'm going to give you something that was more practical for you. And so there was the first world's operation took place. And it was a success. The patient didn't die, nor did they have any harm effects afterwards. I'm being cynical here. So the job of a man is to All right. What did the Apostle Paul say? That comes later on. Right, what did the Apostle Paul say?
Love your wife as the Messiah loved the assembly.
And what did how did he prove it?
Gave his life for.
Gave his life. That's what man is supposed to do. Every man who takes on a wife, he is now to give his life unto her. I'll tell you the big eye-opener for me personally. When I married her and all those daughters, I thought, I've figured it all out, you know. I'll just divide it evenly and I get part of it. No, I got none of it. Now, I woke up to reality. God says, look, I'm going to take care of this thing. Your job is to do what I told you to do. If you need income, I'll provide for you. But no, your job is to make sure that they are taken care of. Make sure they have a place to sleep, place to eat. And you bring in the produce from the field. Okay, well, here's $20. Go buy it. But you know what I mean. If a man is supposed to do, that's his labor, that's his work. What's a woman do? Nothing. She does a lot of things, doesn't she?
She does more.
What is she supposed to do? What's her primary function?
Her family.
Her family and her children. That's right. She must take care of her family. And he is making sure he's to take care of her so she could do her job. All right? It makes it simple as that. So now we're coming back to this point in the Deuteronomy. Now, what takes place here? This has nothing to do with what I just got saying, right? But has only one thing I want to bring out. The man is responsible. When he gives a bill of divorce, you better have grounds for it. Period. Point blank.
Isn't this verse more about the fact that you can't go back and remarry?
You can't go back. No, this is the one you've just divorced from. That's correct.
Right, yeah. You can't
because
go back and remarry the same one you've already
because
divorced.
Because something has been already defiled.
Right.
Now, this doesn't sound very good, does it? The woman got married again, and he dumped her, and now she's defiled. Was she defiled before? Yes. Is she defiled now again? Yes. What makes it worse?
Because he obviously did not take the decision process seriously in the first place, because if he had been more serious about the decision, he either never would have divorced her, or he wouldn't want to go back to her.
Yeah.
So he obviously didn't take the seriousness of that certificate of divorce. He didn't take it as seriously as he should have. You know, it's a very serious thing to divorce a woman. So you can't just dump her off and then somebody else takes care of her, which is supposed to be the original husband's job is to take care of her. Now the other man's taking care of her and then maybe he passes away or something like that. You can't just go around and say, oh, thank you for taking care of her. I want her back.
No. You rejected her once. Ellie.
That's double jeopardy.
You
put her in a position
jeopardy, okay.
Where she's been humbled. She gets out of it. She goes, remarries, whatever happens there, but then she's back in the same jeopardy she was in to start with.
And just keep one thing in mind. This is not talking about women giving a bill of divorcement. Because women are not supposed to give the bill of divorce because they're not the caretaker. When we read the Torah, what? Fatherless, the stranger, and the widow. No widower. If you're a man, tough, go to work. Get your job done. Don't be a bum. You get nothing from the community. But those three people do. Why the stranger? Because he's coming in new. He's got to learn what the laws are, what the situation is, how do you live under God's law. It takes a little while for to get that pattern, knowing how it works. And the language, and knowing also getting to know the laws of God takes a while. Yes. Daniel.
Well, in the process, if you did this whole divorce and remarry and blah, blah, blah stuff, you're doing nothing more than treating your wife as a piece of property. That, I will loan her / rent this land out. And I will take it back when the time is done. No, it doesn't work that way. The human being.
She's created in the image of
basically, women had no other options, because not like now, since the 60s when women went to work and divorce was their prerogative, we have a hard time thinking about those times when you didn't own any property.
And the scripture has nothing against a woman going to work. Proverbs 21.
Huh? Women work for pay?
Yeah, Proverbs 31.
Okay.
She actually can work and get money. Yeah. You go and you could clean someone's house up. You could do that kind of work, especially when you have kids. Yeah. When you have children, now you got a job to do, right? And all some house have to take place. Yes, Jeff.
Yeah, because there are records in the ancient world of women owning businesses, property, and such like that. But what typically happened is they were dominated. Usually some guy would come in, take over, muscle her out, and subjugate her. That's usually what happened.
You have Proverbs 31, it says, she goes out and she buys a land, and she grows crop on that land, and she sells the crop. Is that a business woman? Or a lazy woman getting noisy? Someone new business not supposed to do. No, scripture has nothing against that one. They're supposed to be a helpmate. If they're supposed to be helpmate, guess what they got to do? They got to work. Yes.
The other thing, though, is that at least my understanding is that the man's income has to go for the whole household.
Correct.
Whereas a woman can use her income however she pleases.
Well, now, look at Proverbs 31 and take a look what she's saying. She goes and she buys fabric. And she makes a fabric and gives it to others. Oh, really? How many men know how to go buy fabric and make wonderful clothes? Now, some men are weird. I'm not saying they're not. But majority of men, they say, okay, I got to buy a shirt. And the wife says, not that one. And you say, okay, pick one out for me. Most men, it's not an issue to their world, you know. Now, some are, but that's something different. I'm just being funny here today. Okay. The second one. He says, no man will take a lower or upper millstone. We'll talk about that just a little bit later. And when I was growing up, if someone kidnapped somebody, at least in the state of Washington, where I lived, it was automatic death sentence. Automatic death sentence. Whether you sell them or mistreat them, or you just want to kidnap them for yourself to raise them up, death sentence. Of course, now in our society, it's like saying, well, no. That's our society, our country. Why would God declare a death sentence upon that?
Not that using our current court system is right, but I'll use an example anyway. A number of years ago, our Supreme Court made a ruling that said the state's act of separating a child from their family legally is the same thing as execution of a family. It's the execution process. They determined the state must do so at extreme cases only. To do so to remove parental rights is nothing more than killing a family. So it's murder as far as what the Supreme Court had declared. So if that's their point of view and they're secular, what's God's point of view? Probably, if not worse, than murder.
Any other comment? One of the biggest things I can tell you in my own personal and private life, when a woman is considered unfit, and it was relatively easy to do, it's my personal opinion, that's a bad way. She gave birth to those children. So she's not the mother of all mothers. It's not the greatest mother, but she's still a mother. Someone needs perhaps an elderly lady, like the word of Apostle Paul says, you elderly ladies, teach the younger ones to be sober. Not that they're drunk, but being serious. You got a job now. Your responsibility now. You have a baby now. You have children now. You can't play a little game anymore. That's behind you now. Now you're a young woman and you got children to take care of. And guess what young women generally do? they just say, Mama, help me. Their first child. Because, why? That's what it's supposed to do, right? But not always. But that's one of the things that we learn to try to do in our own life. Now, it's taking a pledge or taking something from somebody like a... we do that in our society, right? If you borrow money, you have to have what's called collateral, right? And sometimes that collateral can be taken and preserved and held by the person that's loaning you the money, and you go and you need to do what you need to do. Torah says that's acceptable. What part says is not acceptable? Did you read it? We read it. Yes?
When it's something they need. He says if somebody gives the collateral of their blanket and they need that to stay warm, you give them back the blanket.
Before the sun goes down. What if they can't pay? You give it to them anyway. Is that a picture of the Creator of heaven and earth? Oh man, it sure enough is. Yes, He will request something from you. And then He will say, okay, I'm giving it back to you. I'm going to have something upon you. What am I going to have on you? What?
Mercy.
Mercy.
But you know, there's something here I hadn't noticed before in verse 15. Lest he cry out against you to the Lord, and it be sin to you.
Yep.
And it would appear that if that person didn't cry out to the Lord, they would go past and would not be addressed.
Yep.
It wouldn't be considered, sin wouldn't be the issue.
Okay. Verse 18, it says, verse 17 is talking about... you shall not pervert justice due to a stranger or fatherless, or take a widow's garment as a pledge. And he said, but you shall remember something. What are you supposed to remember? Say you what? You were slaves. I find this very, very fascinating at this particular point. We know this much from Scripture. Who put them into slavery? Elohim put them into slavery. You remember Joseph? What happened to Joseph? It wasn't until after his brothers came, he says, God sent me in advance for your sake. Was Joseph happy when he was in prison? He was miserable in prison. That scripture just says, and Elohim was with him. He was in jail too with him. Well, he could leave when he wants. And a false thing was charged with things that were not right. He was considered dead. And when he took office, how old was he when he took office? You're 30 years old. 30 years old. And there were 7 years of prosperity. Then began the other 7 years of no prosperity. After the first year of no prosperity, what did Jacob tell his sons to do? Go down and see if you can't buy some grain, right? And we don't kind of know the story, right? Now, in the second year of the plague, of course, he kept one of the sons, right? Simeon. And then later on, a year later came later, and then he says, well, I want the other one. You said you had one more brother? Bring him down this time. They brought him down this time. You know the kind of story, right? And lo and behold, what transpired? This is where, you see, is God behind all this stuff? Or did God, they made a mess of things. Oh, I've got to straighten this stuff out. Huh, where's my plan? Was the plan B? Or is it D? Or is it Z? Or is it, I don't know what it is. God never had that out of his brain. He always knew exactly what he was doing. And Joseph so said, This was God's plan. Why were they put in slavery? What was God wanting? What was his plan to put these Israelites in slavery? He says, I want you to remember it. Why? You don't know. It says right here in this chapter.
Well, it also says, Paul says, all these were written down so we could learn from them.
Right.
So, even past that generation, it's for our benefit to know what it was like.
All right. Let's listen very carefully. It's written right here. It may be hard to see or understand, but he uses a specific example. In fact, he uses two very specific examples. All right? So let's backtrack a little bit. Verse 17, you shall not pervert justice due to the stranger or the fatherless, nor take the widow's garment in pledge. Why? But you shall remember that you were slaves in Egypt, and Yahuwah your Elohim redeemed you from them. Oh, we're supposed to do what he did? We're supposed to redeem them? Yes. Therefore I command you to do this thing. Redeem them? How do you redeem a stranger, a fatherless, or the widow? What do you do? When you reap the harvest of your field, listen carefully, and forget a sheaf in the field, you shall go back and pick it up. No. You're supposed to leave it. Is it yours? Yes. Oh. How do I help the stranger, the fatherless, and the widow? Leave it. They'll come and pick it up. It's theirs. Now, we know there's also another law, which God has, that if you, not as a poor person, but you as an individual, when you go into someone's grape field or cornfield, you do not take a bucket with you. You don't say, oh, I got a big skirt and have someone fill it. No, you don't. It's what you can carry in your hand and eat that moment and that time, that moment. Remember, the apostles did that on the corn. They went in and just plucked the can. I have a cutter. Can't cut the thing. You got to break it off. No cutting. He says, now you shall not go back and get it. It shall be for the stranger, the fatherless, the widows, that Yahuwah your Elohim may bless you in all the work of their hands. Your hands. So remember, you were slaves. Do you remember what it was like when you did all the work with your hands, but you got no reward from it? I want you to understand this, says God. I want you to know I put you in slavery so you would know what I'm talking about. You are to take care of these people. And since you can remember when you were slave and the works of your hands you did not earn, you did not get, but I still redeemed you. I still bought you out. I still called you forth. Now it's your turn. When you have your olive trees, you're not to do something about it. You're not to go over the broth again. You just hit it once. I don't know. I've never had olives. I don't. When the rap, you have to beat the bushes, I guess, for them to fall down. But you don't keep beating them. The ones that are ripe fall down. They're still up there not ripe. You don't get them. Wait and let the others take it. The fatherless, stranger, and the widow. That's how you redeem. When you gather your grapes in your vineyards, you shall not glean it. It shall be for the stranger, fatherless, and the widow. Why is he saying this so many times? And you shall remember that you were a slave in the land of Egypt. Therefore, I command you to do these things. Now, in your life, your personal life, your private life, I do not want to know what it is, but have you ever had a hard thing ever happen to you that somebody else did to you? What are you supposed to learn from that? Hold grudges? That's not what Leviticus says. You don't hold grudges, yes.
Does this is just from the mind of a child, but I remember my girlfriend, she was pretty much the only one I could play with. So, I mean, stuff like that would happen, and I'd have to, we would, you know, be so lonely, we'd march over and apologize to each other. So, because then we were lonely. So it was really a good example to have caused forgiveness, you know?
Yeah.
But I have a question about that, because Amalek, you know, the Lord says not to forget it. So is that not to forget it, but forgive it, or...
No, not forget it. That's a different issue. You were slaves, don't forget it. Now, where does that reach you in the spiritual world? What did Apostle Paul say? Egypt was a type of sin. Don't forget your sins that you have committed, and knowing that the Lord has called you from them, delivered you from it. Remember the transgressions. You have been forgiven, yes, but don't forget them. I, says God, will forget them. You remember them, because that's where I called you from. Now, a lot of us don't like to remember our past. But every now and then, you know, sometimes, maybe every day, you know, I remember something really dumb and foolish and bad I did when I was a kid and a young man. Whoops. Oh, what the, out of my brain. I don't want to think about that. And I was, oh, thank you, God. I'm out of there. I'm not that way anymore. So it's to remember. And then when you find somebody else who sins against you, what are you supposed to do? You're to forget it against them. You are to forget it. But they don't. They must remember it. That's their responsibility. This is what it's talking about. Next chapter. Getting a little late. Funny one here. We'll not talk about the dispute and the quarreling, but it's very unusual where after they found out the guy is guilty, all right, verse 3 is a very fascinating verse. Did you notice what it says? What does it say? Now in Hebrew, it's the word which we have on our psalm we have. What is it? Rasha, or Rashim. The wicked ones, the ungodly ones, the ones who do bad things, wicked things. What does God say the punishment should be?
No more than 40.
Yeah, but technically, scripturally speaking, no more than what the crime is. Don't over-punish somebody. The maximum you could punish them is 40. Now, what happened? Now, we have that in the... Excuse me, I have to remember. I don't remember who Yahshua said, I think, but I don't remember what chapter it was. Where, if you know, you'll be beat with many stripes. If you don't know, well, yeah, you'll be beat too, but not that much. Because you come aware of something. Yes?
In verse 3, it says... Don't go above that, because your brother will be humiliated in your sight. Anytime you over-punish someone under your control, you lose respect for them and they lose hope.
Correct.
So you don't want to go too far.
Now, it's very, the Hebrew word is kala. Kala. It means to disgrace somebody, to dishonor somebody, to... lightly esteem them. Oh, they're not worth much. Once a thief, always a thief, you know, all that kind of stuff. And to be despised, yes.
You know, this kind of reminds me of the image that kind of flashed in my mind was a recent story there was with one of these EPA people was doing a talk, and he was saying that basically how he operates is that he went back to the image of the Romans when they were taking over Asia Minor, and they would just grab first five men and crucify them and making them an example for the community.
Yeah, yeah.
And so you know, you're basically taking innocent people and you're doing the ultimate crime to them. Crucifixion was usually something you did to murderers, you know, these kind of people. And so you just take five random men and you crucify them. You've marked them as being horrible people, and you send shockwaves to the community. You overpunish them for nothing. And so going back to this, it's like that the same thing is that you have not only humiliated that person maybe in your own eyes, but you've humiliated that person in the whole community. It's like, oh, he only stole a candy bar, but you beat him for 40 stripes. He must have done something far worse. Why did they beat him with 40 stripes if all he did was steal a candy bar?
That's what it boils down to.
Ruined the person's reputation forever.
Yeah, we had to backtrack of verse 1 just a half a second. This is issue over something, right? If there are a dispute, or if there is a strife, or a quarrel, or a fight between two, they have to go, and it says here, somebody translates it, says, to court. Not a good word. They have to go to judgment. Remember the Messiah talked about that one? If you say something, you're going to be in danger of the judgment. Oh, sentence is going to come against you. On this particular case, sentence against the man who did wrong. But it's not an excuse if someone kidnaps somebody. Oh, that doesn't fit here, does it? It's fighting between two people, dispute between two people. That's the issue here. Go before the elders or the judges and have every word to be understood. Find out who. Remember, you have to have two witnesses. All right. Go ahead. All right, run out of time a little bit. The next one's weird, right? Okay. Man marries his wife, and there's no sons, and he dies. Okay. And the brother's supposed to come along and say, okay, I guess I have to do that, don't I? Yeah, okay. But I don't like her. You don't like her? Let's go to court. Let's go to judge. Let's find what the judges have to say. Now, why is this this way? Why was it written for? Why at this point in time, what was Moses telling them? Sorry, what?
To keep the person and the family because, you know, their business. I would think their personal business and they would know everything. So keep them in the family that way, you know. Provide for her because I'm sure if she's been to all the functions and done things, she's part of the family. And if they...
What was the order when they went in to the Promised Land? Sorry, what?
Go into the land by your families.
Okay.
And how did that occur? What was required for Moses to do?
To divide up the land among the tribes.
By the lots. Right. Now, what this means, the property rights. You remember our Constitution first had the word property rights in there rather than just rights? Had the right to have property, and they changed it. Because when you lose your property rights, you don't have anything else. You're out of everything. And slowly the government will take over, quote, your property, because it was first put in. You cannot take a person's property rights. And they took it out. Which gives any government the power to take property. And that's what's happening to our country right now at this point in time. Yes?
Oh, no.
Okay. Now, we look at this thing, he says, very much. And the firstborn son, verse 6, which he bears in this situation, will be succeeded to the name of the dead brother. They had no last names those days. At all. Now, there's something very special in Hebrew. And this is very fascinating. Let's continue on here. But if the man does not want to take his brother's wife, then let his brother's wife go up to the gates of the elders and say, my husband's brother refuses to raise up a name to his brother in Israel. He will not perform the duties of my husband's brothers. Now, he had a responsibility. What are you supposed to do? Remember his brother. If your brother died, guess what happens to his land? It's taken away. Because it wasn't given to the woman. It was given to the man. Only three exceptions occurred. But they had to marry someone of their own tribe. They couldn't just marry anybody. They married somebody of their own tribe, and that land came over to possession of their husbands. All right. And he says, no. And he says, I didn't want to take her. Then she does something. What does she do? She removes something. Why remove a sandal?
Because you look silly walking with only one shoe.
Only walk with one shoe.
But she got away with that, though? Just not ran with it, didn't it?
No, she gets in front of the leader. She gets in front of the leader first.
And if he still refuses, the leaders say that she can take his sandal and she can hit him and spit on him.
Now, be careful how that Hebrew has been translated in English. All right. When Moses, God said, I speak face to face. Was he in his face? Or is he talking to him? When you talk to somebody face to face, you're talking to him. I see your face. I'm talking to you. That's what that word means. And say to spit in his face or in his presence. You don't. Remember he would spit? Moses talked about Miriam? God says, wouldn't his own father require this? Yeah. They didn't spit in people's physical face. They spit in front of them, mostly on the ground, as an insult. Okay? Now, see, you have to be careful how when we use that Hebrew word of pane, it means face, yes. But, you know what the heavens are called? This is the face of heaven. You see a face up there?
Yeah.
Well, technically you do. You see the stars up there. That's a face. Face in Hebrew does not mean a physical eyes, balls. It means something has encompassed a tremendous amount of things all at once. That's why it's a plural word. So when they call a person, I'm looking at your face, what do they see? They see an awful lot. Eyes, nose, the multitude of things all at the same time. Oh. Okay, I really don't have a real good answer for you, to be honest with you, but I only have an idea.
But it has people forever then be known.
As the one.
The family of the man who had his sandal pulled off. So this
right.
is serious business.
It's a serious
carry
stuff.
Carry this with you. Forever.
Well, one of the things that jumps out in my mind is that one of the great promises was that wherever your sandals will trod, basically the brother is now cutting off the promise that was going through that.
So his promise also removed.
So basically it's like, you're...
That's interesting.
You're basically spitting in the face of Abraham, I guess you could say.
Well, that may be a very good job, Jeff. That's I never thought about that one. That was a good one.
Oh, and here, this is the commentary, and it says, to remove one's sandal was a sign of the loss of one's rights in the community. Perhaps it was also a loss of rights to walk on one's own land, Ruth 4:7. To spit in someone's face was an act of strong public contempt. Such a public disgrace discouraged men from shrinking from their duties as a brother-in-law, since the living brother refused to maintain the name of his deceased brother. He was in danger of losing the memory of his own name in the community.
So what is it that God had in mind?
It's a loss of inheritance. When in Psalms 60 it says, over Moab, I will cast my shoe. No, not Moab. Philistia. So over Gaza, I will cast my shoe.
I thought that's Moab.
No, Moab is my washpot.
Yeah.
Over Philistia, I'll cast my shoe.
Yeah,
so that's Lebanon and Gaza.
You think
so
you might have
cast?
You think Israel should cast your shoe over Amalek? Not that smart. You know, it's funny because in the Eastern European society, they do pick up their shoe and they do cast it at people, don't they?
We had somebody, a reporter, did that at a
newspaper. To the President of the United States.
Yeah.
Threw a shoe at him. I picked the other one and threw at him, too. It's not just a total insult. It's like, if my foot was in there, kicking in the face, I guess. I don't know. But you're out of my world, yes.
It makes sense, though, with Jeff said that it's a cause, it's a loss of their inheritance also.
Yeah.
That's
because by denying the widow her right to have an heir for the son, the husband who died, if he's not going to protect it, then he obviously doesn't care about the family's land.
In the history, what took place? An example. Ruth. Now, did he get his face spit on? No.
Because Ruth wasn't even there.
I'm sorry, what?
Ruth wasn't there.
Ruth wasn't there. But between the two men.
Yeah,
right.
She had no part of it.
She had no part of it. She's not supposed to be the part of it. Because she's not yet part of Israel. She wanted to be part of Israel. By the way, it's a very fascinating thing about the 10th generation. One of these days we'll talk about it. It involves two different issues. Very fascinating. We'll get into that, I think, the next chapter, next two chapters. But anyway, if there's no more questions, isn't this interesting? 24th, 25th chapter? And it's how God thinks. Wow, it's really weird, isn't it, sometimes? No, preserve a name. Preserve a name. Yes?
Part of the reading had to do with opening your fields. If you have a fig tree, everybody's invited over to our house. Take the second.
Take all the figs you want, right?
Right. That's it.
Yeah, I know.
Most of you probably are already aware of this, but anyway, just bring it up anyway. Because of these chapters, they discuss the son should be put to death for his father's crimes, and his father for his son's crimes, but yada yada yada. A few years ago, as far as I know, the only known escapee from a North Korean prison got out, went through China, now he's in the UK. Relatively young man in his 20s, wrote a book about his life there in a UK prison, in a North Korean prison. North Korea has unique laws. And that their ultimate supreme leader, way back when they first established, he's like the perpetual emperor for all eternity, even though he's dead, makes a difference, he's still the emperor, had this rule of the rule of three, and that if you committed a crime, you and your next three generations must pay for that crime.
Oh, yes.
So if you commit a crime, you're arrested, you're thrown in prison for the rest of your life. Your family, of course, as well. Any children you have are, if they don't have kids yet, they will raise those kids up in the prison, have them have more children, and then those children, of course, are also in prison. And then, of course, all three generations must be executed, must die in prison before the crime is paid for.
Yeah.
And that was a standard rule across the board in North Korea. Very horrific experiences, and what these children, of course, are raised and what this guy had to live through, watching his own mother being executed and his brother and his father and whatnot. Nasty, nasty stuff. But it shows you how evil is still very, very strong in places where God isn't.
Right. Anyway, we just got the reading there today, right? Son will not go to prison for his father dead. The father will not go to prison for the son does. Every man will pay a prison, be executed, or whatever the payment had to be done, that individual will be done. At a certain age, I mean, the child is still under the offices of the parents until the age of 20. And at the age of 20, look out, you're on your own.